thank you, Daniil, for your thoughts on a perfect day. One day leads to a lifetime that we have a plan. The next presentation is by an individual who is also a member of our life training program. The distinctive part of his expression is that you'll appreciate his candor and his sincerity. But that's not all he has to offer. He has a tremendous wit as well. He's a long-standing member of the society and has spoken to us many times before. The title of this presentation is Clarity of Expression. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ross Tanner.
Good morning. Clarity of expression. One of the things in life that often causes so many problems between people is a lack of clarity of expression. What is clarity? You know, we often think of, you know, when we have a lot of heavy rains around here and the water gets really dirty, we put two glasses of water and one is pure and filtered and the other one is turbid and dirty. We see that the clarity is obviously the one that's clear. It's something that we can look right through. It's invisible. You know, if it wasn't for the fact that it's in a glass, we wouldn't necessarily even know it's there. There's no distortion. And it's very obvious and apparent that, you know, it's there's no, well, you can't have confusion in water, I guess. Maybe I can. But it's something that's a very transparent, you might say. And so often in our communications with others, we run into these problems where things are maybe not understood clearly. And it's almost like that turbid water. You know, the message doesn't get across properly, doesn't get translated properly. Maybe we don't give it properly. Maybe it's not received properly. But it can result in a lack of understanding, disappointments, and problems, that sort of thing. So clarity of expression is something that's really wonderful, a really wonderful quality to be able to develop and apply, because it certainly helps us in our dealings with other people. Despite the fact that we live in a very material world, we have to always keep in mind the fact that we have a very special role as a human being in that we are the only species that has this power of communication. You know, we're not outfitted by nature to be like different animal species, the beaver building the dam and so on and so forth. The human being doesn't have an instinctive law, doesn't have a sort of a defined role in that way. But we do have this power of conscious expression. And it's a very important role to play because really, if we don't have the expression of light, then what is there? We have to recognize that we have a role to utilize that power that we have as compared to the animal kingdom. The Cavalarian philosophy gives us the understanding of how that power of conscious intelligence comes down through mind and how mind is created and balanced. But yet, in spite of that, that's only a foundation, because whether we have balance in our thinking or not, all of our efforts in life and our thinking still must be developed by the effort and function of our own mind. Granted, you know, it's like building a building. If we have that balance, it's like having a good, strong foundation and we can build upon it. But in spite of whatever kind of foundation we have, we still, the onus is up to the individual to develop that thinking power in order to be able to be expressing their role in life. So clarity of expression really comes from clarity of our own thinking. And, you know, we've all heard the statement that we are what we think. And, you know, if our thinking is confused, then our expression is going to be confused. And I think we all recognize the fact that we can only really express something clearly when we really understand it. So while we would like to have clarity in our expression so that we can communicate clearly and be understood well by others, we have to recognize that we need that clarity of our thinking in order to have the expression. So it's almost like a two-edged sword there. You know, if we're not clear in our thinking, how can we be clear in our expression? But the fact is, if we can work on developing clarity of expression, that in return will help us develop clarity of thinking. So it's the two sort of go together hand in hand. The more we practice being clear in our expression and in our thinking, the more it helps us in our mental processes, our mental thoughts. So instead of thinking about the way this could be broken down, and there's a couple of aspects relative to thinking and expression that we can look at. There's sort of an internal aspect. You know, what are we thinking about when we're, say, we're just on our own, we're not in a group of people? You know, what sort of thought processes are going on? How are we processing information? How are we developing our concepts from the things that the outside stimulus, you know, whether it's something we've read or something we've been told or something that we've observed? There are internal processes involved in that thinking pattern, the way we come up with particular concepts. Another aspect of that is also our listening ability, because, you know, we're not speaking all the time. Very much, you know, we should probably often be speaking less. Sorry, we should probably be listening more than we're speaking. You know, the old saying about, you know, one mouth and two ears. Listening in itself is an art form, you know, to be able to really understand what others are attempting to communicate to us. So those are sort of internal aspects. The other aspect might be the external aspect. And of course, the most obvious of these is our verbal communication. You know, whether it's in the home or at school or in a group or whatever, everyone communicates, everyone speaks, and really doesn't pay much attention to it. We were talking earlier about how man should be that conscious expression. And when you look around the world today, you see that there's very little recognition of really what that power of language really is. You know, you see all sorts of slang terminology. You see abuse of the power of the word through, you know, vulgarity. You see misuse through deceit, through lying, you know, politics and... Well, the legal aspect often is not based on whether there's, you know, the principle of truth and justice, but, you know, whichever lawyer can sort of bend the words to fit the situation. And it's not that it's all necessarily devious, it's just man's attempt to come to grips with his power of expression that he has and trying to utilize in a constructive way. Sometimes the intent is not constructive, but nonetheless, even if our intent is constructive, we can still be misconstrued. So it sort of makes us realize that, you know, there's a wonderful tool that can be worked with here, but it takes a degree of skill and effort to really develop and utilize it properly. So verbal is, you know, pretty obvious external communication. Another form of external communication can be writing. And, well, maybe many of us aren't doing a lot of writing. We're finding that more and more, especially in today's world, people are using the computer, they're using email, and so, you know, they have to use that tool as a means of communication. And if it's not utilized properly, we can develop some real misunderstandings. Another external form of communication is body language. You know, we often think of the way we express ourselves, we present not only what the words we're saying, but the visual presentation conveys a message in itself. And then another aspect is through the eyes. You know, when we're communicating with someone, we're looking at them, they're looking at us, and we're told that the eyes are the window of the soul. So, although it's certainly not as, you might say, comprehensive a form of communication, there is an aspect of communication to the looks as well. So just to talk about some of the external aspects first, because they're the most obvious things that we can work on and work with. We mentioned one of the points there was our verbal communication with others. And of course, our verbal communication to a large extent depends on our vocabulary and our use of words. So we're striving to be clear, to use words with the proper meaning. If we can expand our vocabulary, it expands our range of expression, expands our thinking. We try to eliminate slang. And realize that, you know, it's a lazy form of communication. And really it represents a degeneration of the use of the language. In our verbal expression, we try to avoid negativity. We've all seen an interesting example of just the physical aspect when we had a recent Qigong demonstration and saw the effect of even a term that is used commonly, no problem. Who would think there's anything detrimental to something like that, and yet it was illustrated how just utilizing that expression, how it had an effect on the strength of the body. So that's something that we should be very aware of, and, you know, when we're using different expressions, don't just use them automatically, but, you know, stop and give some thought to them. What are we conveying when we're using that terminology? You know, is it constructive? Well, if it's a verbal expression, another aspect, of course, is the speed of delivery. You know, we can, when we're tense and wound up, we can often tend to speak very fast. Have you ever had the situation where you've been speaking to someone and maybe you're naturally a fast speaker and they're a slow speaker? You know, and you're trying to get it out and they're dragging along and you're trying to get it out and they're dragging along and they're not quite finished, so you start right in again, you know, and it's just very awkward. I deal with a fellow that tends to be rather deliberate. He doesn't talk really slowly, but every once in a while he'll stop mid-sentence and, you know, to gather his thoughts, and then he'll carry on. And some of our conversations must be absolutely hilarious, because I'll be rattling on and then I'll stop and then he'll start and he'll stop for a little thinking pause and I'll start again and then he comes in. And of course, when you're working on a cell phone, that makes it even worse. So, you know, sometimes when I hang up, I really wonder what either of us got out of the whole situation. And it just makes me realize, you know, that we have to learn to stop and be aware of other speech patterns and tailor them. One of the tools relative to sales presentations, they tell you, you know, if you want to approach someone and communicate well with them, one of the best means is to sort of match the pitch of or the speed of your delivery to their expression. So, you know, if we're talking to a person that's slow in their expression, then just relax a little bit and let them get it out. And then when we express, you know, don't go at it like a jackhammer. And there will be better communication, better absorption of the message. And, of course, the other thing relative to our pitch, too, is, you know, we communicate that because if we're really wound up and nervous, that comes through in our voice. You know, we start to squeak. What am I doing up here? So we have to learn to be an individual, stay calm, take a deep breath, relax, speak from the solar plexus, and allow that natural expression to flow through us. One of the things that the teacher mentioned when we're speaking about philosophy in particular, is that we should learn to put some life into it. You know, we should feel what we're speaking and expressing, and we should convey that. We want to convey it in a sincere manner, and, you know, it's not that we have to be all dramatic and, you know, overblown in our expression, but we don't want to be deadpan and monotone either, because what's more dull than trying to listen to someone that's blah, 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 blah. You know, you tune out really quickly. It just doesn't make any impression at all. But, you know, when we have the opportunity to hear someone that has life to their expression and they're interested in their topic and they seem to want to convey that enthusiasm to you, then it just picks you right up and you're right on tune with them. And so the message gets put across more clearly and it's accepted more clearly. The volume of our expression is another aspect. You know, if we're too loud and blasting people away, then that's not good. If we're too quiet and, you know, they can't hear anything, well, obviously they're going to miss a lot of the message there anyway, but we put an extra strain on, because then they're struggling to hear what we have to say and they're not getting the whole picture. Too much of their mental energy is going into just the mechanics of the transmission of the thought. So we want to be able to express in a natural fashion, in a way that's going to most be easily received by our audience. Our vitality, as we mentioned, if we're enthusiastic, that'll come through in our communication with others. You may have heard of the sales present or some of the sales training when they tell people when they're talking to people on the phone, they should, you know, they pick up that phone to make the call to smile, because it'll be felt by the other party. Well, I don't know if the other party is necessarily feeling it, but certainly if we put the effort into putting a smile on our face, you know, think a happy thought, then that relative plane of mind is going to be expressed in our communication, and I think that is what's really being felt by the other party, you know, as compared to, you know, if you're annoyed or irritated and you're growling, you know, that comes through as well. So it's not always just the visual cues, but it's often transmitted through our mental expression, through our voice as well. When we're talking about written communications, that is a very good exercise in helping us to develop clarity of our thinking. The reason is because we have to sit down and we have to lay our thoughts out, and we can go back and review them and look at them and analyze them and think about them. And it's quite interesting in this day and age, you know, with such heavy use of email in the business world in particular, how many people now, they are very, very reluctant to pick up a phone and phone someone. And, you know, if you really think about what you're communicating with on email, personally, I find, I'm not the fastest writer, but very often if you write a message and you stop and you think about it, and just think about it from the other party's point of view, you know, they don't know what you're approaching them with, and so they have no sort of biases or preconceptions, misconceptions as to what's being expressed. How are they going to interpret that? And we see many, many examples of emails that go out where people are misunderstood. You know, because email is sort of like, as compared to a voice conversation, it's like black and white and technicolor. You know, when you've got something in color, you get all the fine nuances and the subtle interpretations, and you just don't get that out of writing, which is more black and white. So when we put something down in writing, we have to stop and look at it from an objective point of view and say, well, you know, if it's clear, you know, we know what we wanted to say, but how is the other party going to receive and accept that? You know, are they going to misinterpret that? Are they going to get the wrong meaning? And I think one of the lessons that many businesses are learning is that very often email is not necessarily the best way to communicate at all times. It certainly has its efficiencies, its quickness, and you have a written record, but very often, if it's not done properly, it can result in greater miscommunication because of the way it's put down. So writing is a good way to train ourselves to think logically, think analytically, and it also, as we develop that and become quicker at it, it helps us speed up our mental process of analysis as well. Body language, you mentioned, body language is sort of a minor aspect of it, but you know, when you're speaking to someone and you can, again, people that are involved in sales are very aware of that. You know, if they're talking to a prospect and he's all crunched up like this, and even though he's agreeing with you, you know, that more or less signals that he's very much on the defensive or he's not receptive. So he might be saying yes, 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 but internally he's saying no, no, no. How can I get out of this? I'm leaving. And, you know, there's many aspects. You know, if someone's giving you a message of urgency and they're sprawled out on the couch and they're talking very slow, I mean, how are they communicating that urgency? You know, the building is burning down. I think we should get out of here. Well, you know, it doesn't inspire in you a sense of leaping to your feet and dashing for the nearest exit. So we sort of should be aware of our body language from the aspect that we want it to be natural and complementary to the message that we're trying to deliver. And then another minor but still important in its own way aspect is our eye contact with others. It's good to have eye contact when we're talking to them, but obviously we don't want to stare at people or bore a hole into them, you know, with an intense gaze. But we all know, again, like in talking to people, that if we don't have a degree of eye contact, then there's often a sense of, you know, there's shiftiness or lack of communication or possibly dishonesty. So if we're open and honest and presenting to someone, then if we can make that eye contact, that's helpful in communicating the message. Of course, we recognize as well that our thinking has a great degree of power to it, and we want to make sure that when we make eye contact that our thinking is constructive. I mean, we all have maybe been on the receiving end of what we often hear referred to as like a dirty look from someone, you know, and so when we look at someone, we want to make sure that thought that we're thinking towards that person is constructive and beneficial. And if we're on the receiving end, obviously, we can't control the look that the other person is giving us, but it's our own mental individuality that can be our protection there. So it's a minor point, but, you know, eye contact and the look is also part of the whole communication process. So those are sort of some external aspects of communicating. What about internal? Well, we're talking about thought patterns. You know, when we're on our own and we're just going through our daily affairs, you know, our mind never stops. We're always thinking about something. So what are we thinking about? You know, are thoughts just flowing to us and we're just sort of reacting and responding to them? Or are we actually analyzing? Are we really thinking about what we're hearing? When, you know, we can sort of test ourselves on that. You know, if we sit down, for example, and maybe we read a newspaper article of some topic that really interests us, and then, you know, half an hour later, somebody asks us a question, and you try to communicate what you picked up from that article. And sometimes it's a little bit shocking because you realize you got a general impression, but, you know, you don't remember the date, you don't remember the, you know, maybe it's a business thing, you don't remember the numbers, you don't remember this, and you stop and think about it. You think, well, what did I really get out of that? You know, I looked at that, and I got a general impression. It just sort of washed over me, and then it's gone. You know, I can't really express what I read, so do I really, you know, did I really gain anything by it? And I find that quite interesting because I think it's very much what we see when we study our philosophy and we're trying to think about life and why we're, you know, we've heard so many times that, you know, we can keep going back and reading the books and we keep getting something new out of it. And the reason for that is probably because we're trying to grow in concept and we're struggling to analyze and make it part of our concept. And yet we can only absorb so much. And it's like all learning. It has to be done over a period of time and it involves repetition. So as we develop that pattern of learning to think and to analyze, we take a thought and we make it our own and becomes part of our concept. And if we do that, then when we're asked a question, we can answer it because it's part of our thinking. So, you know, it becomes a matter then, you know, if we're just observing things or, you know, maybe we're in a presentation and something sort of washes over us and we come away without really being able to explain to anyone else what we really heard or what we learned, then in a sense we're just sort of mental daydreaming. You know, we're wasting our time because we're not using our analytical ability to make that part of our thinking. Doesn't mean that every concept we reach should become part of our thinking, but it does mean that, you know, we should be selective and analytical so that when we're presented with something, it just doesn't make an impression that sticks with us. But we analyze it, pick it apart, and take the constructive aspects of that and make, you know, utilize that for our own thinking pattern. The other aspect of thought patterns are assumptions. You know, we're all have done this, I'm sure, at one time or another where, you know, we just assume something is understood. And that often crops up in the email thing, too, you know. You're on this particular train of thought, and you're sending a message to someone, and so you're automatically assuming that they're on the same train of thought. So, you know, you zap something off and send it off, and they get it. Where's this coming from? What does this mean? What does this refer to? I often think relative to assumptions, it reminds me of the movie where Peter Sellers walks into a hotel lobby, and there's an old fellow sitting behind a desk, and there's a dog down on the floor, and he comes in, he looks around, and walks up to the fellow, and he says, "Does your dog bite?" And the fellow says, "No." So he goes over to pet the dog, and of course the dog attacks him. So after he shakes the dog off and extracts himself from the thing, he turns around to the fellow and says, "I thought you said your dog doesn't bite." The fellow says, "That's not my dog." How often do we work on assumptions and assume things, and you know, then there's a misunderstanding and a problem because we, you know, we just assumed that something was the case and didn't really analyze and take it the full way. The other aspect, as I mentioned, an internal aspect of communication is listening. And really, you might think that listening is not part of expression, but I think in many ways it is, because particularly when we're trying to speak to people about the philosophy, you know, we're in a very material, busy world, and people are caught up, they're distracted by all that's going around them. And philosophy sometimes is maybe the furthest thing from their mind, and we're trying to introduce them to maybe concepts that are quite different. And people are often so bombarded and so full of information, what they've heard and even what they think, their own opinions relative to things, that very often we have to set the stage. We have to learn to allow them to express before they'll be open and receptive to a thought that we might want to present. And it's like the simile of, you know, the bucket's full of water, so you almost have to let it drain a little bit before you can add any more in there. And, you know, so often it's just like, you know, if we feed little bits of information to people at a time, then if there's an interest, they'll pick up on that and they'll come back for more. You know, instead of shoving the whole buffet on them right at one shot, and they end up with indigestion and their minds are closed. It's too much. It's information overload. So we have to learn to make a judgment call relative to the person that we're communicating or expressing to, to determine just how much of that message is getting through, and learn to not overwhelm them. You know, we all, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, man is a species that has this power of conscious expression, and, you know, we all like to express, and, you know, there's a natural response to talk. But again, we have to learn to be able to listen as well. And in that listening, very often, it can help us with those problems that we run into when we make assumptions, because very often when we hear what a person has to say, we might find that their thinking is coming from a completely different area than we had planned to present something to them. And so it gives us an opportunity to adjust our presentation so that it'll be more receptive to their understanding. The other aspect of listening, of course, is, you know, you can take it too far, or you can be too silent. And that can cause problems. In the business world, you know, for example, when you're dealing with people, sometimes silence can be taken as acceptance. And it's quite interesting. Some lines of work, you know, when you're dealing with people on contract issues, it's very, very important to, right at the outset, you know, to have some kind of a clear understanding. Perhaps you can't commit yourself to a particular position at that particular point in time. But you also, at the same time, have an obligation to that other person to let them know what the ground rules are of the conversation you're going to have, so that there's no misunderstanding or misapprehension on their part. Because there's nothing worse than working on the assumption that something's understood. And then, of course, you know, things happen, maybe money is spent, and then, you know, the question comes up and, you know, there's a disagreement or there's some difficulty. And that could have all been avoided if there would have been some clear communication and clear understanding right at the individual outset. The other aspect relative to listening is being honest within ourselves. Very often we are maybe in conversations with somebody and they express an opinion and we don't necessarily agree with it. But, you know, maybe we just sort of let things go. We don't take issue with it at the time, and then as time goes on, it gets more and more involved and more of a problem, and then when it finally does have to be resolved, then it's very difficult, because there's all this backlog, all this groundwork that's gone into the whole communication process that all has to be undone and sorted out. Whereas if we would have just learned at the time that something was, you know, well, we run into it all the time, you know, issues with people sometimes. Someone wants to do something that, you know, maybe we think is not completely honest. So what do? Do we bring it up? Do we discuss it? Or do we just bite our tongue? And that's where, again, you know, if we don't sort of step forward and present our thinking at that time, our silence can lead to a very difficult and awkward situation to resolve at a later date. The other area where misunderstandings can often crop up is where we don't really aren't honest in letting people know what we really think about something or what we feel about some matter, you know. And again, you know, you often find that sort of a problem arising a lot, you know, where there's closeness, you know, family situations or work associates and so on, because one of the challenges in dealing with people is very often, you know, when there's familiarity, we start taking things for granted. And then we sort of assume that someone should know how we feel or how we think, and so, you know, then we get miffed if something is done and it's sort of not the way we thought it should be or whatever. But that's really just a selfish attitude when we stop and analyze it, recognize it. It's not that we have to be around sort of saying, well, I want this, I want that, you know, I think this should be this way, that should be that way. But at the same time, we do have to learn to communicate with others and not just assume or expect that that they'll understand just because maybe they're close to us or we work with them all the time. So those are just some points on clarity of expression. Clarity of expression is really important because it's the outer expression of what our thinking is. You know, as we mentioned before, as we think, so we are. And, you know, if we can learn to develop clarity in our thinking, then we're going to have a better ability to be clear in our expression. If we can work on developing better clarity of expression, it'll help us with our clarity of thinking. So by working those two hand in hand, they complement each other and can help and support each other. And to achieve clarity of expression is really a worthwhile accomplishment. If we've ever sat down and written something and put it aside and come back and read it and it makes sense, we think, boy, that was good. You get a sense of accomplishment from that. And it's the same way when we're dealing with people. If we can communicate clearly, there's no misunderstandings, communication is wonderful. It's just when we let all these little things slip and interfere in between that the problems can arise. And so we can work on that by just being more conscious of what we're doing, what we're speaking, what we're thinking, and the way we deliver it for greater harmony in life. Thank you.
Thank you, Ross. I warned you about